We'll call this meeting of the Education Finance Committee to order. The first order of business will be the approval of the minutes. Representative Ward moves approval of the minutes dated February 1st. Is there any discussions, changes, or additions? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. There is one bill on our agenda today. Representative Downey, House File 92. And the chair will move House File 92 for possible inclusion in a possible bill later on. Representative Downey, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate the chance to have this bill heard, and I appreciate Chair Erickson, her consideration of the bill and passage of it here today. And if I could invite Representative Barrett down as well, he will be a co-testifier with me. Representative Barrett authored essentially the exact same bill, and so I want to thank him for being of like mind with me. The great minds think alike theme, I think, here, and welcome him to testify as well.
And Representative Downey, just my apologies. Yes. Before we get started, we are being televised, and people might be wondering why the chair is wearing a Farmington sweatshirt, why Representative Myra has her classic Burnsville Braves jacket on, although it's got the 75 on the side even.
That,
yeah. So, and people might be wondering why that is, and we should just, for those watching on TV, explain to them that this is School Spirit Day in the Education Finance Committee, so staff, committee pages, or most staff, pages, members are showing their school spirit by showing wearing either a K-12 institution in their district or a higher education institution they attended or support. And so just want to make that clear for those. Do you want to add anything on to School Spirit Day, Representative Downey, before
you
begin?
Well, it was just a great coincidence. I dress like this because it's so darn cold out, and come to find out it's School Spirit Day. It's perfect. So
even a broken clock is right twice a day, Representative Downey. So, again, please begin with your testimony on House Bill 92.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill is actually a very straightforward repeal of the current statutory provisions around the January 15th contract deadline and penalty provision. And Mr. Chair, if it would be appropriate, could I also, as an author's amendment, move the amendment that's in people's packets?
Sure. Representative Downey moves the A1 amendment for House File 92. Can you please explain the amendment, Representative Downey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The A1 amendment essentially makes the repeal retroactive to January 1st, 2010. There were a number of penalties administered last year for districts who were, I think, largely, by and large, doing just the hard work of contract negotiations in a very difficult fiscal setting. I authored this bill in this type of format last year and thought I would do that again this year so that any school district that had received the penalty, and I believe there's a worksheet in your packets as well, that outlines the districts that would have been affected by this last year during 2010, and those folks would actually, in the upcoming biennium, be reimbursed for any penalty fees that they had incurred.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Downey. Any discussion or regarding the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, say nay.
Nay.
The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Downey, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'd like to describe this bill, maybe not in terms of the particular statutory provisions. We'll have a number of testifiers that will talk about that, and I think many members here have actually given this some consideration. I'd like to just put a little bit of a personal face to this and describe what happened in my district last year by virtue of this contract deadline penalty. And as you can tell, I'm wearing an Edina sweatshirt here. That's my home district. I actually grew up there. My dad taught in the school district for 35 years. In essence, I was raised by a bunch of teachers over in Edina. So I was part of what has been a decades-long love affair, if you will, between my community, its school district, and its teachers. We're very, very proud of the work that our district does, very proud of our teachers, and extremely pleased with what we have in our community with our school district. And Interestingly, and I think unfortunately, by virtue of this contract penalty deadline this past year, this contract deadline penalty this past year, a significant rift erupted in that by virtue of the imposition of the penalty. My district, in good faith, and the teachers in good faith, began negotiating their contract very early in the process, actually reached with the representatives of the bargaining unit a tentative agreement in September of 2009. That agreement was in the end rejected by the membership in October of 2009. They came to a second tentative agreement in December of 2009. That was rejected by the membership just before the January 15 deadline. Subsequent to that, they actually did finally settle, literally just 6-8 weeks after the deadline had passed, for roughly the exact same contract settlement amount as was originally offered in January. And so I know the intention of the current statute is that it would provide an incentive, a deadline, and that it would create a fair negotiating process. My experience through what happened in my district and through testimony that you'll hear is that this really isn't about a deadline. This is about having a level negotiating field, and I don't think it's level the way this penalty is imposed. And the unfortunate result of this in my community, in my district, was that this wonderful relationship between teachers and the district and the parents and the kids was ruptured. The district was compelled to write a letter to the community stating why this penalty had been incurred, the reasons behind it in terms of the process, but also the law, trying to explain that to the public. The teachers' union then felt compelled to put out their letter stating the reasons for why they had rejected it. Teachers, the district, parents, and unfortunately kids as well, this was all played out right in front of the kids, are now all pitted against each other in this strange kind of combination of circumstances and communication. And so this is something that was really unfortunate, penalized my school district for what I thought was entirely good faith contract negotiations, and ended up really pitting people against each other in an unfortunate way in our community. So I bring you that personal story just to let you know what actually played out in one district. There's a number of other districts that have played out. I'm sure the circumstances weren't exactly the same. But it does play out, and it's unfortunate, and I think this is a situation where the law creates not a level playing field, not a fair, good faith negotiation process, but one that favors one side over the other, and bad results happen. So with that, let me ask Representative Barrett to offer his own personal testimony, the reasons why he submitted his bill, and then, Mr. Chair, I think there's some other testifiers that would like to come down both for and against the bill.
Thank you, Representative Downey. Representative Barrett, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Representative Bob Barrett. I represent the good folks of Chisago County. I want to give you my testimony today regarding a situation that has happened in our district and also across the state, but in a little bit different way. I'm part of a district, Chisago Lakes, who actually agreed on a contract with the teachers union and the teachers last year on January 14th. And so my understanding of what happened is there was an increase given during that time of, I think, 2% the first year and 3.5% the next year in a time of flat funding. So my thoughts regarding this bill, and the reason I thought I wanted to introduce this bill, is because of the unfairness of the situation, as Representative Downey alluded to, and how that impacts the children later in the year. Because of the situation where the budget increased as a result of the negotiation that happened with a deadline imposed of January 15th, the budget got inflated, and it was later in the year then teachers were cut from the district. Teachers were eliminated to pay for this budget adjustment or budget increase that happened on January 15th. So as I looked at it over a year ago and trying to understand this law and what it means to kids, I felt that this is a situation that should be changed, because I want to make sure that the kids have an opportunity to have the most benefit for their dollars, which means more teachers in the classroom. So I come here, I'll be brief, but I want to also mention that you may hear testimony today. That January 15th brings both parties together to both present a realistic offer at the table. I would argue that it mandates that one of the two parties in the contract negotiation come together on January 15th with a realistic offer. You may hear testimony that keeping the January 15 deadline is actually good for the kids. My belief is it pushes districts to sign a contract they cannot afford to be made up later through teacher cuts. You may also hear that keeping the January 15 deadline provides for more local control. I believe that eliminating this state mandate provides for more local control. And then finally, you may hear testimony that the $25 fine per student actually reduces the amount of money available to teachers in the final settlement contract. It does not. Most contracts are settled prior to the deadline, so my position being a little bit different than Representative Downey's, I'm concerned about what the fear of that deadline does to the final contract. And contracts are settled on January 14th, January 15th, when there is a maximum negotiating ability on one of the two sides of the party. My final comments are that I am a basketball referee, a Minnesota State High School certified basketball referee, softball umpire, and baseball umpire. And so there are rule books in each sport. Got a basketball rule book and a baseball rule book and a softball rule book. And as an official, I should have brought my uniform today so I could like mitigate any issues between the Big 8 and the Big 10 or the Minnesota Conference or not. But the rule book we apply has to be applied fairly to both sides. You know, if I were refereeing a basketball game and so I come up and I say, okay, you guys, you get five fouls and you guys get five fouls too. But when this team A gets five fouls, they're going to stay in the game. But if team B gets five fouls, they have to leave the game. That wouldn't be a fair application of the rules. And so I'm looking for a fair application of the rules that we have in statute. So I thank you for your time. I'd be open to any questions now or later.
Thank you, Representative Barrett. And once again, you prove that the best way to communicate to men is to make things a sports analogy.
That's right.
So good job. Representative Downey, if it's okay, we'll take questions. We could take your testifiers, those who are in support of the bill. Then we will have, just like yesterday, we'll have the opponents of the bill speak, and then we'll all questions take place after. Is that okay, Representative Downey?
That's great.
Thank you. And Representative Barrett, thank you for your testimony. So first on the list, I have Brad Lundell. Scott Kroonquist, you're on deck. Hi, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell, Schools for Equity and Education. I'll admit I screwed up on School Spirit Day, but I was lucky that I wore green, and I did live in Edina for about 4 years, and so I guess I'm here honoring Representative Downey with, you know, some shade of green.
Thank you for your testimony. The next person on the list is... Please proceed, Mr. Lowe.
No, we are certainly in support of the repeal of the January 15th deadline that was contained in both Representative Downey and Representative Barrett's bill. I think that the testimony in the full committee or in the policy committee, just to reiterate what I said, there, I think the memo that went along with the bill was very clear. It's a distorted process in some sense, as it is without the January 15th deadline. The January 15th deadline merely distorts it further. We believe that repealing the January 15th deadline would level the playing field between management and labor to a greater extent, and certainly is something that we would support.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm member Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and we also are very much in support of this legislation, and thank Representative Downey and Representative Barrett for bringing it forward. I think the most compelling evidence is the handout that's in your packet. I think that was provided by House Research that shows the penalties that have been administered since 1990, and I just did a very rough addition. It looks like close to $6 million since 1990 of funding that was meant to go out to your local school districts instead was sent back to the general fund. And I think, Mr. Chairman and members, that is nothing short of just a shame to have that be the case. That's money that was meant for student programming to help raise student achievement, and it didn't go out to schools. I shared with you very early in the session that we did a survey of our member districts and asked them what their projected budget gap is for next year, assuming flat funding, assuming that you can somehow pull the rabbit out of the hat and maintain flat funding for your schools. Our districts are looking at $150 million in combined budget gap for next year. We can't afford a $25 per pupil penalty. So we strongly support this and hope you'll do likewise. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Next on the list, we have Ms. Kelleher and Mr. Grathwall. You're on deck. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record. And just, you know, I don't know if there's a house rule on inappropriate attire in a committee hearing, but I'm close to calling it on that Packers hat, Representative Greiling. But, you know, it is, the Super Bowl is this weekend, and I guess we'll cut you some slack if that's all right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Davney was just saying that, you know, he's conditioned to take his hat off. His mother taught him that, but Representative Erickson and I, being women, have agreed that I can keep my hat on. And the Packer hat is very important. You know, my husband is from Green Bay, has season Packer tickets, and we're having a Super Bowl party on Sunday. The house will be decorated with lots of stuff like this.
Well, Representative Greiling, you'll be happy to know that at some point here, I'm going to get up and I'm actually going to threaten the entire state of Wisconsin. Everyone knows that a Vikings fan, whoever they root for, loses the game. And we also know the state of Wisconsin currently owes our state about $58.7 million in a late tax reciprocity statement. So I'm thinking that myself and some other Vikings fans are just going to openly threaten to support and root for the Packers to win that game. And so that's my plan on dealing with it. And to say Friday, 5 o'clock, pay up, or else your Packers are going to get it. So, Ms. Kelleher, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's quite a curse there you're to throw out. So I will be very brief today, Mr. Chairman. We sent out just a sort of a detail of the bill of what we thought were some good points to be made in favor of repealing the January 15th deadline. I want to point out that we really feel there is a greater risk of inflating salary, language, and benefits to avoid this penalty. I think if you look at data, if districts don't have the January 15th deadline, they tend not to settle. And when they're forced to do it, you see they all settle, because this really is stick to get school districts to go forward. MSBA asked our colleagues from around the nation if they had similar language for teachers. And out of 32 responses we've gotten from around the nation, no one has a similar law provision. Also, this is a provision that provides only for teachers. It excludes public charter schools. So it's an interesting piece that teachers get this, and you don't find this with nurses or policemen or firefighters. And there has been past precedent for this rule to be temporarily suspended in hard times. If you look at the sheet Mr. Strom passed out, you'll find that in 1998 it was temporarily suspended, 2002 and 2004. So there is some history of realizing that districts really can't come to fair settlements with this stick out there, Mr. Chairman. With that, I'm finished.
Thank you, Ms. Kelleher. Just a quick question. You mentioned that you said how many states you surveyed. How many states said they did not have such a penalty? How many did say they had a penalty?
Mr. Chairman, we've received 32 responses from states around the nation. I would be happy to provide that list to the committee. The others have not responded, but every response we've received says, no, we don't have a provision like this in law anyplace. And often they got more colorful after that.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kelleher. Mr. Grathwall and then Ms. Gilbert, you'll be next. You're on deck. And after Ms. Gilbert will be Ms. Rattel. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Jim Grathwall with the Minneapolis Public Schools. And I actually wore the spirit wear. Mr. Davney has some spirit wear. And I thought I'd bring some for Representative Slocum, because we consider her an honorary member of the Minneapolis delegation, even though she teaches in Richfield. We thank Representative Downey for bringing the bill forward. We strongly support the bill. I'm here because we took the penalty this time around. This was the first time Minneapolis Public Schools has taken this penalty. I don't have intimate experience negotiating labor contracts as part of management, but in the negotiations we do around here, it's trust and relationships and a shared vision that actually seal the deal and get it done. A coercive penalty doesn't really help us get there, didn't help us get there. So we strongly encourage you to support the bill and repeal this penalty. Be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you. We'll take questions at the end of the testimony. Ms. Gilbert and then Ms. Rattel, you'll be the last one. Welcome, Ms. Gilbert. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Mary Gilbert, representing the St. Paul Public Schools. I am a Hermantown High School graduate. We were the Hawks, which were referred to as the Hicks when I graduated, and now Hermantown is considered the Edina of Duluth. So the district has changed considerably since I graduated.
Hey, Ms. Gilbert, is this Edina of Duluth? Is this considered a compliment or an insult?
I think it depends. Members, thanks for taking this opportunity to share the St. Paul Public Schools District support of repealing the January 15th deadline. As you know, our superintendent is working with our community right now, embarking on a strategic plan to try and ensure that we close the achievement gap in all schools, align our programs, and also sustain our programs. And even though we are interested in tradition in St. Paul, we cannot continue to balance our budget by cutting people and programs. The superintendent had to cut $27 million out of our budget in her first year. That was her first chore on the job. We've closed eight schools. We've combined school programs. In 2009, we eliminated 236 FTEs at the district, and it's been well over 1,000 over the last 5 years. And so we are looking for any tool that we could have that would assist us in trying to maintain the educational programs that we have in St. Paul.
Thank you. And last testifier in support of legislation, Ms. Rattel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Cecilia Rattel from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I'll try to keep this very brief. This is one of the main issues that actually came up very early in all of our policy discussions over the summer. So we added it to our policy statement. The main feeling from a lot of our members was this is money that's intended to go for kids. And by forcing people into settlements that either they can't afford to pay the penalty or they can't afford the contract is not the intent of getting a good, solid contract. So with that, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rattel. Members, at this point, we'll take questions for the testifiers who testified in favor of the bill. Let's see. We have Representative Peterson, who's not wearing school spirit, and Representative Ward, who is. So we'll go with Representative Ward.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just want to make some comments about the bill, period. And so I don't mind waiting until all the testimony is done. Or
that's fine, Representative Ward. Thank
you. But I want to be on the list.
Yeah, you're
I have to stand to be recognized.
Papa Peterson, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess first of all, I want to recognize Representative Barrett for his work on behalf of this issue. Representative Barrett worked on this issue before even really being a candidate. I understand that we're hearing Representative Downey's bill. I'm a co-author on this bill. I support both. But I think for the record, because Representative Barrett is a humble man and he wouldn't tell you the story, is that, you know, he worked on this at the grassroots level, brought it to his convention, actually made this a big issue, you know, at the local level, and I just want to commend him on his work in that regard. And then I guess my question for the school board members, are we on that?
Yeah, we're the
portion
right
still.
Now. Yep.
Is you know, I think there's some people at the table who might say, well, of course, you know, the school boards are going to be in favor of repealing January 15th. You know, it's in their best interest to do so. And I guess I maybe would ask any one of them that's willing. I think there's another side of the story, and if they could elaborate on the benefit to the teachers, in particular younger teachers or less experienced teachers, that repeal of January 15th. Would bring.
It's an open question to any of those who testified in favor. Do they wish to come down and address that? Representative Downey, did you want to, or we got, okay, Mr. Kronquist?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Member Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metro School Districts, and I think I understand Representative Peterson's question. 80% of a school district's budget is staff. And so when school districts have to make cuts, there's not a lot of places to go. I mean, staff is going to be on the list. And so if a district settles at a rate higher than they can afford, then it's going to result in layoffs. And I think the point you were getting at is the first to be laid off then are the youngest teachers with the least seniority. So yeah, that's absolutely the case.
Thank you. Any follow-up, Representative Peterson?
Nope.
Yep. Representative Bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering, to a question to any of the testifiers, from a historical perspective, is there data pertaining to more strikes or negotiations being extended before or after this legislation went in, and is there any proof metrically that this is going to cause, you know, negotiations to stretch out or strikes to happen? So that was my question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Grunquist or Ms. Kelleher?
Well, Mr. Chairman, and I'll defer to Grace too, but quickly, you are going to see a chart that shows that, yeah, there are going to be more unsettled contracts probably if you get rid of the January 15th deadline. You know, and I guess in the vernacular of my 14-year-old son, duh, you know, I mean, if there's not a penalty, then yeah, there probably will be more contracts that don't get settled by that time. Which is why we advocate actually for having a different kind of deadline and a different solution to this. We think January 15th, for one, is way too late. Why are we waiting in the first place till January 15th, halfway through the school year? Let's move a deadline up to more like September or October. And then rather than having a financial penalty that's going to penalize students, and really in the long run, let's put in a situation where we have the two sides submit to arbitration, which we, as you all know, do with many other employee groups already in the state of Minnesota.
Ms. Kelleher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a list in front of me that I would be happy to share with the pages to share with members that talks about the master list of strikes since 1946. And Representative Bills, we see 1981 had a significant number of strikes going forward. 84 looks like it, too, and certainly last year stands out. So I'm not sure if I can tie all that to precise language, but our state has seen its share of teacher strikes throughout the years, and I'll be happy to provide information to the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Kelleher. Representative, is that it, Representative Bills?
Yes. Thank you, sir.
Representative Anzels.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think two of the testifiers, in particular, the testifier from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, alluded to the notion that the penalty paid by districts is taking dollars away from the instruction of children. I think an argument could be made that if you carry that as far as you want to carry it, we could conclude every single dollar is directed toward the instruction of students. And perhaps the testifier envisions a day when the students are miraculously educated without teachers. Now, obviously, that's a preposterous conclusion, but the deadline and the penalty are required, it seems to me, to get the negotiating process, the collective bargaining process, to begin in a responsible manner, in a responsible time frame. And without the deadline and without the penalty, these negotiations may never get started. And I think it gets at my last comment, which is a question. Does the Minnesota Chamber of
Representative Anzels, we're on TV. Representative Anzels.
For public school teachers.
Representative Anzels, can you repeat your question into the microphone? Because we're on TV, and I think when people are away from it, they're not able to hear it.
Thank you.
Representative Anzels.
Thank you, and I apologize. Does the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce support Minnesota's collective bargaining law as it pertains to public school teachers?
I would submit questions for Ms. Rattel. Ms. Rattel?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Anzels. I don't think we have a very defined position on the collective bargaining agreement. Our policies are all on our website, though, and as you will see in there, the January 15th deadline is specifically in our policy and the repeal of that. I would agree that the analogy that you made that we don't need teachers is preposterous, or that's the direction that we're trying to go in. But I also do think that and our members think that having such an unlevel playing field when you're trying to negotiate a contract is also, I mean, preposterous. Because you wouldn't do that in a, you know, business contract. You wouldn't say we're either going to get this done by then, or you have to give money back to the general fund that's not even for sure going to go back to education. I mean, when you think about it conceptually, it just doesn't make sense.
Representative Ansels, you have a follow-up?
Thank you very much. It should be noted that the testifier did not answer the question about Minnesota's collective bargaining law for public school teachers, because that is really what is at issue here. With this legislation, and I suspect many other pieces of legislation to come.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Downey and I will have to arm wrestle in a little while. Edina versus Roseau, that's got a rich tradition, there's no doubt about that. This isn't really a question as much as it is a statement. I have been chief negotiator for two contracts in Roseau and have worked up against the January 15th deadline. And as a chief negotiator in my school district, for me, it's an unsettling situation for me. It really is. It gives us this deadline. Our school board is insistent on the fact that should we go past the January 15th deadline, the $25 per student will come out of the settlement. Whatever they were offering before is going to be reduced by those number of dollars. The other thing that it did for me personally is that it pushed us into basically a mediation situation, which became somewhat uncomfortable. If you've ever been involved in a mediation session, it's not a real pleasant atmosphere. The people that I negotiate the contract for are my friends, and the people that I am negotiating with across the table are my former students, and I have their children as my students now. It's not a situation that I found to be extremely helpful, and it made my relationship, I'll say, a little strained with friends. We do things differently in small towns. Everybody knows that. You know, our contract that we have in Roseau is fairly thin, and I know compared to some of the metro schools, those contracts are fairly large. We work together in small towns. My personal opinion is that we could settle our contracts without the January 15th deadline. And in any contract negotiation, there are two sides. There's the management side, and there's the employee side. And I understand the dynamic involved in that situation. I guess Roseau and Edina in this case are in agreement. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. On the list, I have Representative Breinert, Greiling, and Mariani. And then at that point, we are going to go to the opponents of the legislation. If you have questions for the supporters of this, please do that. Otherwise, we'll move you over to the general comments list where Representative Ward is on top. So, Representative Breinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to start by saying that I served on a school board for 12 years and have negotiated a wide range of contracts with a large number of bargaining units, including being chief negotiator for the school board in teacher negotiations. So I have a great deal of direct experience with this issue. I've negotiated under the deadline and without the deadline. So with that said, as a board member, I did advocate for the removal of this deadline, but I'm more concerned for a little bit more objective data than anecdotal evidence. There's a lot of personal experiences being referred to here, and I could run through mine in more detail, but I'm not going to do that because I don't think it'll enlighten the discussion. I would like to ask either of anyone in our staff or anyone who testified in relation to this bill if they're aware of any research in the labor arena about the role of contracts, contract penalties or deadlines in achieving a more successful or more rapid settlement. To me, that's the critical question here. because there are individual stories in both directions. I think some districts have succeeded with the January 15th deadline and others haven't. So I'm wondering if that body of research exists, first of all. So if anybody is prepared to comment on that who testified on behalf of the bill, or any of our staff members are aware of any of that research.
Representative Breyer, do you have a preference of a specific testifier you'd like to answer that question, or should I ask Mr. Crow and Mr. Strom, what's your preference?
Well, my preference is to have anyone with knowledge in the area attempt to answer the question.
Mr. Crow or Mr. Strom, did you hear the question from Representative Brennan?
No.
Okay, can you repeat the question, Representative Brennan?
So I'm wondering if there's any body of research, and this may not be your area, but in the labor arena that supports the role of penalties or deadlines in contract settlements.
Mr. Crow, Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Brenner, why don't we get back to you about that? I don't know that offhand.
Representative Brenner.
Okay, and so this is a pretty critical piece of information, in my opinion, for assessing this bill. But with that being said, the other thing I wanted to mention was the history of this legislation initially was designed to facilitate contract settlements, and it wasn't initiated by our bargaining units. It came out of the legislature after a series of strikes and failed contracts. So contracts that had gone on and for very long, contract negotiations that hadn't been settled efficiently. This was an attempt to speed that up, and it did not come from the bargaining units. I think it's important for people to be aware of that history.
Thank you, Representative Breyer. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want you to note, in deference to your comments, I've taken off my Panther hat, but I still have on my daughter's letter jacket, and I want to thank you for having this day. I think it's fun, it's team building, and it also gave me a chance to email my daughter and say, I looked at your letter jacket more carefully than I did when you were in high school, when I was exhausted with all your antics, and realized I'm very proud of you and all the things you did in high school, so thank you for my getting to do that with my daughter. My comments about this bill, and I do have a question, so I get ahead of Representative Ward. Some of them were made by Representative Breinert. I have been around long enough to, I think half of this school board, or this committee used to be on the school board. But when I was, I remember supporting having a deadline as a remediation for all the strikes and, you know, the angst that that brings. And I remember strongly that Education Minnesota or MEA and MFT at that time didn't support it. So I find it so ironic, all these circles in life, how now we think of it as the labor union provision that we must get rid of. But they it worked out better for them than they thought. Because I think it worked out well for students, too, because we don't have this year-round contract negotiation that does spill over into the classroom. I've always supported the fall deadline and wondered why we have to drag this out over the holidays and then come back and reintroduce all this when we could be done with it before school starts or soon thereafter. And I think now, with technology, there's not the excuse that teachers can't communicate with their members over the summer. They could, and they easily could, and so why can't we get it done sooner? But I don't think that it's cost us so much. Someone said we're the only state that has this. Minnesota does not have, by far, the highest teacher salaries in the country. It's quite the reverse, and I'm sure when Ms. Halswiger gets up here, she can give us exactly where we rank, but it seems to me we're in the lower half in terms of teacher salaries, even with this provision. So I don't think it's working against our students. I think it's helping them, and I always am a person who needs deadlines as a legislator. We would never get done if we didn't have a deadline, if government didn't shut down and the people beat us up for not finishing on time. I always started my big assignments in college and elsewhere, you know, at the last minute. If I didn't have a deadline, I wouldn't have ever got them turned in. So I think it's a human nature thing. I don't think it hurts students. My question is about the amendment, and I managed to not be here when it was passed. But I'm wondering why we have this amendment when we have a $6.2 billion deficit, 7.2 with inflation, that pays back a few districts who didn't manage to make the deadline. And then that's going to come out of the budget that's there for others of us whose districts did manage to make the deadline. when there's people don't make deadlines, I think that's a natural consequence, that you take a punishment. You could get your home floor closed on if you didn't make your payments on your house. Representative Dabney was over here talking, saying he has to pay his bills on time or he gets interest charged. So I'm wondering why that amendment, we're paying for districts that didn't follow the rules, didn't finish on time, and then that comes out of the other districts that did.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Greiling. The purpose behind the amendment, frankly, is to make a very strong statement. I think our committee has landed on, or at least Chair Garofalo has articulated a motto, and that's kids first, no excuses, no exceptions. And the purpose of that amendment is to give very pointed numerical evidence to the fact that school districts had money withheld by the state. And if you think about how upside down and backwards that is, members, we have this kind of colossus down here at the state. It's a combination of policymakers and bureaucracy and union representatives. And we are what is setting policy deep into school districts, deep into our classrooms. And the fact that we require a fiscal note that will be interpreted by some as spending in the next biennium, by virtue of the fact that the state took money out of those districts a year ago, in my mind, is highly symptomatic and evidence of the fact that we have way too much upside down. And so this is a very strong statement to say we're going to support our local districts. This is a very strong statement to point out how upside down it is that the state is counting as revenue that we will then have to somehow spend simply to restore the funding that was deserved by those districts in the first place, simply because districts such as mine, embarking on a, I think, a very fair and well-intentioned bargaining process with two tentative agreements with representatives of the bargaining unit before the deadline to show how upside down this penalty payment really is. So, Representative Greiling, I appreciate that there will technically, when you stay within the pie chart of state government budgeting, there is an expense to this. But it really is not an expenditure of the state. In fact, it's a return of money that was due to those schools in the first place and through, in my mind, no fault of their own, in a very tough fiscal environment, doing their absolute best to negotiate fairly with their teachers to be assessed a penalty doesn't make sense to me, seems unfair, and seems upside down, and the amendment serves, I think, to accentuate that statement.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one quick follow-up. This is the kind of thinking that we have to guard for, I think, all the rest of this session, and that is that spending money isn't spending money if somebody gets some money back somehow, because anytime we give a tax credit or somebody doesn't have to pay something that they otherwise would have to pay, a lot of us think of that as free money or doing good by somebody and it doesn't cost anything. But every time somebody gets a break, there is less money for everybody else. And so this is very fallacious thinking. We all need to watch the tax committee for giving out tax credits for puppies and things like that, because every time you do something like that, it is going to be less money for the kids of Minnesota.
Representative Greiling, you had to go after the puppies, huh? Well, Representative Greiling, do you want to move an amendment to delete that section out of this bill?
Mr. Chair, I was not here when the amendment went in, and so I don't know what the vote was. I'm shooting in the dark. I'm guessing it probably passed overwhelmingly, but did it?
Representative Greiling, it did, yes.
Well, then,
but,
Mr. Chair.
But there is, you know, we do show deference. Usually some members allow an amendment to go forward because the author has brought it forward and they feel that the author should be able to control their own bill. But if you'd like to offer the amendment to delete that appropriation, I'll rule that in order. And
Mr.
if you're not
Chair?
Willing to do it, I'll be willing to offer the amendment as well, and we can get members of this committee on record on how they feel about it.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to let you do it then, and I'll be happy to have the chance.
Okay. Well, if staff could please work with me to have an amendment drafted to delete that section out of the bill, and the chair will request a roll call on that amendment. Next on the testifying list is questions as Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, I was a little hesitant to be called upon, seeing as I forgot the chair's request, as you can tell. However,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Greiling.
Mr. Chair, I offered him to share, and he wouldn't do it.
Well, Representative Mariani.
So, Mr. Chair, 2 points. One is, as a lifelong Bears fan, and I'm sure Vikings fans here can appreciate this, I would rather be dead than wearing a Packers hat. This is never going to happen. This is ancient warfare. but actually, the other issue is, you know, I'm a McAllister grad, and of course, we're the Scots. I don't think the committee would appreciate me wearing a kilt to committee. That's probably not a pretty sight, but...
We appreciate your discretion, yes. Representative Mariani. We appreciate that.
Mr. Chair, I do have a question, but I also... Representative Greiling triggered a question for me. And maybe I'll just put it out there, and we could talk about it when the amendment comes. But, you know, as a Finance Committee, it's pretty typical for us, if we're going to be moving... provisions that have fiscal impacts, that we have fiscal notes so that we know what the heck we're voting on. So what is the impact of the general fund, and what are other related issues you know, connected to that? And so I would argue, members, that even just procedurally, lack of a fiscal note at this point really tells you that the only responsible thing you can do is either lay the motion on the table or vote against the motion, and then hope that at some point, you know, the committee will bring the issue back forward in its proper format. That would be the proper way to do it. So I offer that advice to the chair, to the committee members, and to those who will be casting a vote in a few minutes, possibly. But my question is to Mr. Kronquist, and it goes to the nature of the alternative. And I think one of the things that, and I've been guilty of this myself over the years, so I'm not going to cast this person's here, but I think, you know, we often put forward proposals to one another that don't include the full range of alternatives before us, and so it becomes sort of sometimes we'll take sort of these extreme votes, you know, it's either all or nothing kind of thing, and it seems to me that there are some alternatives here, and I don't know that we've had a full discussion about whether those are wise alternatives or not, but Mr. Kronquist mentioned two of them, which is to move the data away from the January date to a fall date. And actually, you said this twice. You said this in policy committee as well. And then, to look at a binding arbitration scenario, which is not atypical in many similar situations. And so my question, and Representative Downey, this will lead to a question to you, as you can well imagine, but my question to Mr. Kronquist is would your association AMSD in fact support a bill like that? Have they taken a position in the past on a bill like that? Have you requested a bill like that be put forward? And then I'll, for the sake of time, I'll just slide over to my good friend, Representative Downey, and ask him to comment on the possibility of a amendment or, you know, an alternative scenario at some point in the process here that might be inclusive of those kind of alternatives.
Representative Mariani, I'm going to go to House staff first for your first question regarding the fiscal note and the financial costs, and then we'll go to Mr. Kronquist and Representative Downey. Mr. Crow, Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair and Representative Mariani and members, K-12 is a little different on fiscal notes because we tend to do a lot of the fiscal notes ourselves in-house. It does happen that the base bill that's before you does have a fiscal note on it, but we could have just as easily told you what that number was because it's a forecast number. And so when it comes to the amendment, you got a printout in your packet, and this is typically the kind of bill where we'd give you a run in lieu of a fiscal note if there's a formula change. Sometimes we ask for fiscal notes if there's behavioral changes, you know, related to voters and voter-approved elections, for example. So if you look on the last page, page 3 of the printout, for fiscal 2010, there was $2,500,000
$250,000 worth of contract penalty. So that would be the fiscal note, $2.5 million for the amendment, in addition to the $700,000 that was in the fiscal note for the original bill. And it would be fairly typical for us to just provide that information to you rather than requesting it through the fiscal note process.
So then, Mr. Chair,
Representative Mariani.
Will we move this bill to what?
Representative Mariani, the motion currently as it stands is to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in a possible bill later.
Thank you.
Mr. Kronquist, Representative Mariani, had a question for you. And if you could, Mr. Kronquist, Representative Downey, if you could wrap it up, we want to make sure we give the opponents of this a fair chance at their side of the story, too.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Mariani, the answer is yes, we do. We actually have that on our platform this year, is proposal to support classifying teachers as essential employees, which would then, you'd have a similar process to we have in current law with our policemen, firefighters, actually school principals, I think, are under that same category, where if you reach a deadline, then what commences is both sides submit to binding arbitration. And, in fact, I believe the House bill was introduced today, and I believe Representative Kelly is the author, so I could defer to him, too, to talk more about that bill.
Okay. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mariani, we had this exact question in exchange in the policy committee, and short answer is yes. And the fact that it's being laid over, I think, gives us ample opportunity to explore those options. I chose to actually have the bill heard today, or requested of Chair Garofalo to have the bill heard today as it is, so that we could continue the discussion formally through committee as compared to sidetracking into lengthy negotiations. So I'm thankful to the chair for the chance to hear the bill today, grateful that it's going to be laid over, and look forward to a discussion with you and others, and including the department, to find a workable end solution here.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So thank you, Representative Downey. Now we want to give the opponents of the bill a chance. Ms. Allswager from Education Minnesota. And I did receive a note from the Department of Education. When Ms. Allswager is done, we'll have you come down and offer your thoughts on it. Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Allswager. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswager, Education Minnesota. I think that you've had an interesting discussion. You've had some good questions. I'll try to answer some of the facts and statistics as well. You know, I just would like you to think about this. What problem are we trying to fix? I mean, if this goes into play, and is it that we're trying to reduce teachers' salaries? Because the argument I hear is that the teachers have too much power. That would lead me to conclude that maybe they think teachers are making too much. Let me tell you about the facts about Minnesota teacher salaries. Minnesota's rank in the country was 16th in 2005. In 4 years, in 2009, we fell from 16th to 20th. But that's because some of the salaries are higher on some of the higher-ranked ones. Because listen to the average teacher salary. We are $2,000 less than the average salary around the country. When I started here in 1995, the teacher salary rank compared to the other states was, I believe, number 8. We're now 20. So I'm asking, what problem are we trying to fix? What leverage do teachers have that is working so well for them or working so poorly for the school boards? We don't think that that is happening. Teacher salaries in Minnesota as a percentage of school budgets in 2000 was 40.3%. In 2008, 38.8%. Every category that we have looked at to compare, we are falling. So teachers are not getting this great leverage at the bargaining table. I handed out some graphs. Before I get to the graphs, our members feel that this law, and as someone stated earlier, that the organization was opposed to it when it first went into place, has fostered collaboration. We have found that as a result of the January 15th contract settlement deadline, everybody knows they have to get their work done. So when they come to the bargaining table, they offer realistic offers. Yes, you're right. Some people have personalities that are difficult to work with, and sometimes it doesn't work as well as we would like it to. But we would argue that the January 15th kind of put some of those people on notice that you have to come to an agreement. That includes teachers and administrators, because it forces both parties to work collaboratively. I would ask you to take a look at the chart that I passed out. The statistics are very clear. In 1995, there were 3.59% of the locals were not settled by January 5th. Were unsettled by January 15th. There were three contract rounds where the deadline was lifted. Take a look at those bars. We have 63.6%, 73.9%, and 66.9% were not settled. That means negotiations continued beyond January 15th into the rest of the school year, maybe a month, maybe six, maybe another year and a half. We have had, during these times, teachers' contracts that have not been settled for 2 years. That is why, in the legislature's wisdom, a number of years ago, your predecessors, and maybe some of you, passed this law, because it makes people work together. And someone asked about strikes. That's another one of the reasons why this law was originally passed, to help foster collaboration. So if you look at the third document, you'll notice that there are only there were three locals that had strikes, and they were all in the years where there was not a January 15th contract settlement deadline. Now, here is the interesting one. Go to the second page, and these percentages show the settlement of the teacher contracts from September 1st, and then for each month through January 15th. We've heard over and over again, and you've heard it today too, that the teachers have too much leverage. Well, these figures prove that that's not the case, because September 1st, you're seeing in the 2009 year, 1.78% settlement increase, excuse me. And as you go down October 1st, November, December, January, into January 15th, the settlements are less. And it's all in aggregate. So that means it is even smaller. And that is for both years. I'd also remind you that even with the January 15th contract settlement deadline, we have a number of districts who have, teachers have agreed to salary freezes. Hard freezes. No schedule improvement, no steps. In both years, in 1 year or the other year of the 2 year contract. We believe it's working. We had testimony recently from one of the local presidents who said that they worked with their district to make sure that they saved 66 jobs. It was all in how they settled their negotiations. Our teachers have found that as a result of this law in place, they have sought training on interest-based bargaining, getting to yes, reading these types of books. Education Minnesota has also worked hard to foster collaborative negotiations. It used to be, before this law, that most of these negotiations were confrontational bargaining. The old-fashioned negotiations that we kind of picture. It's not that way generally at all now, and mainly because of the January 15th contract settlement deadline. So, members of the committee, in trying to be helpful, We have in the past, and we would today, agree to an earlier settlement deadline. October 1st probably makes sense. We could not accept the final offer, total package final offer arbitration. That is really on the other side. And if you are going that way, I would ask you again, what is the problem you're trying to fix? Because those things would likely result in lower teacher salaries. As I said, we've dropped from 16th to 20th, and it was the 8th not that long ago. Some of your teachers, well, this was 2 years ago, I was talking to a teacher up in Detroit Lakes. And we had a regional meeting, and this teacher told me at the top of their salary schedule is $48,000. They didn't even hit $50,000. Are those teachers making too much? Do they have too much leverage? A beginning teacher makes $33,787 in the state, I believe. Is that too much for a four-year degree? For the people who are educating our kids? How much do you value the teaching profession? How much do you value what we pay them? Do you want to attract them, retain them? I'd ask you to think about a number of the pieces of legislation that are out there. And if you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you, Ms. Allswager. In your testimony, you mentioned that you brought up the hypothetical of binding or arbitration, and certainly one of the things this committee will do later on is we're going to take a look at the collective bargaining process. We're going to have management as well as the union representatives to explain to members to sort of demystify the collective bargaining process. That'll be we'll dedicate an entire hearing to that, and you'll play an important role in that. But during your testimony today, you said that this would result in lower salaries if we had this arbitration clause that existed. My question for you would be, in this hypothetical you're designing, if that were the case, if school districts were spending less on salaries, what would they be spending the money on instead?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the school board makes those decisions. I could not say if they are spending it on supplies, on class size, if they are spending it on co-curricular, extracurricular. Those are decisions that I don't make, that local school boards make. And I would just make sure that people know that I did not bring up the final package total offer. I kind of responded to it because I would not originally bring that up.
And Ms. Allswager, when you say spend money on class size, what does that mean? When a school district spends money on class size, what does that mean?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, spending money on class size means that you are determining how many kids you want in a classroom.
But if you're, Ms. Allswager, if you're spending money on class size, doesn't that mean you're hiring more teachers?
Mr. Chair, I would say very possibly, but if you have a declining enrollment, you might also just be maintaining the dollar amount. I mean, you might be maintaining that classroom. I think it's a difficult question to answer, but certainly you reduce class size, it costs more money, no doubt about it.
Ms. Allswager, thank you. And we'll make sure that we, again, when we have that committee hearing on the collective bargaining process, you will play an important role in that as well as the management side of the table. I have questions for Ms. Allswager, Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I have a couple of questions, and I'm not sure if it, to Ms. Allswager or whoever wanted to respond, but a question about kind of how the process starts now and what the general time frame is for these contract negotiations. I'm, in listening to the testimony, clearly, and I think Representative Greiling, you brought this out very well, is that it would certainly be my preference that these kind of negotiations are not going on while school's in session. I'd like to know that my teachers and everyone is focused on having kids learning and doing well in the classroom. And I guess I'm wondering kind of about the selection of January 15th and are most contracts settled before school even starts?
Ms. Allswager.
Mr. Chair and Representative Loon, I believe it's March 1st that this year that the contract negotiations open, and there's a formal request to open negotiations that takes place. I can say generally at that time the teachers' union and the district during the spring start having discussions about what they would like their proposal to be. Often what also happens is there are very realistic discussions about what the district finances are with the representatives of the union and the district to face the realities of the budget. We know that that happens. And some locals will actually start negotiating in the spring. Many of them really work very hard in the summer. It is then next if we were to just look at this year, next January 15th would be the January 15th settlement deadline as in current law. So they have about 9 months or so to get their work done. As a result of the January 15th contract settlement deadline, we have seen just a record number of settlements early. They have tried to get done, some of them, in the summer. It is a little difficult, though, because at times they want to bounce ideas off of their teachers when they come back in the fall. So September, October is also a time when a lot of settlements will come in as well. Getting it done just in the summer is possible for a few locals, but it isn't possible for everybody. And teachers often have summer jobs, second jobs, and so on to try to make ends meet. And so that is also a problem. Even some of the negotiators have second jobs, so it is hard.
Representative, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I guess just throwing out, I'm not sure if we have this kind of information available, but, you know, if that is an average length of time for collecting bargaining agreements, you know, 9 months roughly. I mean, I don't know. If these kind of negotiations go on every 2 years, that seems to me to be a fairly long period of time. And again, I think I just have concerns about this. If it's starting in the spring of the year when it's a busy time of year in the school year and there's a lot of testing of students and that going on, you know, I would just like to see the negotiations involving the adults in the school district not overlap what's most important to our kids. And secondly, Ms. Allswiger, I just wanted to respond to kind of your comments about the pay of teachers. I don't think you'd find many people around this table who would say that our teachers are grossly overpaid. I certainly would not make that. I think they earn every penny and probably deserve a great deal more. But I also know that that's not the situation our school districts are in. We determine to a great extent, and in a lot of factors involved in that, what the school districts are going to get through the per pupil. We cap what they can levy their local community for and that. So there is a very finite amount of funds that the district has to work with. And in my own district, you know, going out in that levy referendum process, and as a parent, I've worked on those and trying to get our community to support them. What has been difficult is when we know negotiations are going on and we're trying to pass a levy, and we have to tell parents, we need you to support this. But even if you support it and you offer up more of your property taxes to the school district for the education of your children, there will be absolutely no improvement in class sizes, which are too big, because the decision's been made that the money isn't going to go there. And so, you know, these are very difficult decisions, as I think we all know, but you know, I don't think it's a matter of people not wanting to pay teachers more. It's a matter of two very equally important goals. One is that we pay our teachers what we can afford to pay them, and second, that we, through this process, always keep in mind who we are all there to serve, and that is the education of our students. And I don't think anyone's trying to put the teachers, you know, at a severe disadvantage to that. It's just recognizing the difficult decisions.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Allswiger, I was looking at your, you know, listening to your data about the salaries too, and when I was on the school board and negotiating my first contract, I made sure that half the money went to as a straight percent, and the other half went you know, distributed across the lanes, because I had a concern about the entry level pay. And because of the steps and lanes, if you go, if you don't split some out straight to each of the dollar figure to the teachers, then you get a higher balance. So is it possible you could take that data you've got, give it back to the committee at how we compare for teachers in their first 3 years, in the middle of their career, and then that are topped out at the, you know, like 20 years plus, to be able to understand if we are adequately paying entry and experienced teachers? And then on the question about, you know, I see some validity to the deadline, and I would prefer to have it sooner, but I think that would also dictate fairness, that instead of fining one party, that if you were going to fine, that you would also fine the teachers' union $25 per pupil, so that it's motivated on both sides. And what is your comment on that?
What do you say, Ms. Elsway? You're willing to get a pay cut to keep the penalty in law? I'm just kidding. Two questions there, Ms. Elsway. First of all, can you get the data that Representative Quam asked for? Is that possible to get that information to the committee or not?
Mr. Chair and Representative Quam, I think we can get that information for you.
Super. And then the second question.
We'll try it to the best of our ability. The $25 per pupil penalty for a small union is going to be significant, but we're willing to talk about anything that we can try to come to some kind of an agreement. Our teachers don't even bring that much in I don't know how much, I don't know the exact dollar amount, but in dues that they would have at the local level to pay that.
Representative Kwan, do you have a follow-up, or is that it?
No, I eagerly anticipate the negotiations.
Thank you, Representative Kwan. Representative Bills.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Alsiger. As a dues-paying member, I appreciate you being here and representing teachers. So my question to you is about just the origins of this. Why did it, and I guess Representative Quam and I are kind of thinking alike, why did it start that just the district side was the fined or penalized entity in this? So.
Elsiger.
Mr. Chair, I think we would have to go back and talk to previous legislators. I don't know exactly whose idea it was. Yep. I mean, in terms of why that decision was made in the way that it was.
Thank you. And if I could again, and again, Representative Quam and I were thinking, like, local unit by local unit, it is up to, like for me, DCUE, to define the step and lane, correct? So if we as a local bargaining unit wanted to tighten that up, and I think this is Representative Quam's point. If we wanted to tighten that up and offer a higher entry-level wage, we could do that, correct? I believe I'm correct, but I just wanted you to confirm.
Ms. Elsweger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bills, you're absolutely right. The salary schedule can be is often negotiated, changed, just like it was with QCOM. Mm-hmm. Changes in salaries and compensation was determined as a result of negotiations. Mm-hmm. And I would just offer that, you know, I know we're not here today with a budget surplus at all, but, you know, one thing that is possible that would benefit everybody, I think, including students, is that if we were able to get to a point, have a small incentive per pupil, so that anybody who settles by, let's say, October 15th, gets $5 per pupil. I don't think that the money would be incredibly, I guess it would probably be about $5 million. But
very good.
Yeah. So, and this bill right now has a fiscal note to it, and there isn't anything in this bill that is actually helping the budget deficit. So not that we think that the way that works is helpful to the state either. We understand that problem. But comparing the January 15th law to what and how negotiations work and how we're able to concentrate on kids' education versus dragging out negotiations over a year or 2 years, we think that this is better for kids, for teachers, and the community.
Representative Bills, you have a follow-up?
Thank you. No, I also appreciate Representative Mariani and others like him talking about negotiations and how we could change the date and adapt that, and I think we can get to some solution. And also, think Representative Greiling too, to the point about penalties. It made me an epiphany. But if you maybe something like if we go into special session, elected representatives have to pay back their salary because. Well, maybe. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
that's funny, Representative Bills. That's funny. The final question for Ms. Allswager will come from Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for your testimony, Ms. Allswager. You made some good comments, and I appreciate that. But I do have to ask you one question when we're talking about possibly negotiating earlier in the summertime. And you mentioned that it may be hard for a teacher because they could have a second job. But I just have to ask, isn't it even more difficult during the year when they're working at their first job? I mean, how would you say one would be harder than the other?
Ms. Allswager.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, you generally have a negotiations team that would be, on average, probably between 5 and 10 people. 10 is probably a little high. That represents the rest of the teachers. And so during the school year or the summer, the problem is not the negotiations team getting together. The problem is more with communicating with the membership about a ratification or the issues that have been discussed and are proposed that they will be voting upon. So if I'm not answering your question, you can rephrase it, but I think that I'm getting to the point that you asked. I would also point out in that second sheet that I gave you that had the statistics about the salary settlement increases, those are the numbers that are settled or are reported and are settled when the settlement is ratified. And it takes into account everyone who is there at that time. It's a snapshot. And so it takes the individuals who are retired, who retire in those 2 years. It takes even the layoffs. And when you look at the actual dollar amount, and this is a MDE figure, that in 2009, the average increase for teachers was $17. So while you see those percentage increases, I just want to make sure that when you really look at the numbers, it's 17.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, does she answer your question?
Well, just to follow up, thanks, Mr. Chair, but with the advent of electronic communication, that would be less of a problem, I would assume, wouldn't it, as far as communicating during the off-season from school?
Ms. Allswager.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, I think you, during the school year, teachers are not able to take vacations like we can in the... for, let's say, the second week in September. And so they do take vacations. They do take college classes. And we have membership meetings where we bring people, all the members in, to learn about what the contract looks like. You know, what did we change, or what did they change, what did they delete, what did they add? And they want to have that dialogue with their union about it. And oftentimes, then as a result of these questions from our members, that there's clarification between the district and the union about, well, what do we mean by that language?
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony today, Ms. Allswager. Mr. Shackleton from the Department of Education, and while he's coming down, this is a public hearing. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify either for or against this bill? Seeing none, this will be the final testifier we hear in this bill, and then we'll go to members' questions and comments, and we'll be starting with Representative Ward. So, welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. Brian Shackleton, Director of Government Relations for the Department of Education. And, Mr. Chair, I would like to apologize. I recognize this is not a higher education committee, but I'm from South Dakota, Pierce, South Dakota, which is the capital, and I couldn't get home to get my green and white. And, yes, our mascot is the governor. I ran cross country, so I ran as a governor. Would you hazard a guess what the girls' team was called? They were the Lady Govs.
Okay, that was what I was going to say. Yeah,
of course.
So, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. So, to the bill. In speaking with our commissioner, she kind of her thought is, you know, the fiscal penalty doesn't make sense to charge kids for the problems that adults cause. That was her thought on that. On the deadlines, she believes in deadlines. You know, this, the Constitution in this state says the legislature must be finished in May. There are other legislative bodies, California, Washington, D.C., where there is no such deadline. And frankly, she is thrilled that you're willing to lay this over and continue the conversation. We'd like to engage and express that to Representative Downey, and so absolutely, that's my message.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate that. And we will go to closing comments. Representative Ward.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And my initial responses have changed since the beginning. So bear with me, members, please. You know, I represent Fabian and represent Breinert and others that have said that they have been a negotiator in the education arena, and I too have joined that. I was a pre-penalty negotiator and a post-penalty negotiator. I was involved in two strikes. I walked in two strikes. I was engaged in a third strike as a support advocate for that third strike. I want to get back to kids. I want to get back to Representative Graffel. Your very initial statement in this committee was, you know, we're going to do everything good about kids. And, you know, all of us that have had the opportunity to be engaged in not only kids, but in our communities. Because, Representative Fabian, as you said, it does engage and involve our kids and our communities. The personalities, the friendships, the relationships, especially in rural Minnesota, you know, that we engage in the negotiating process are real, because we're sitting across from our friends, from our neighbors, from maybe even our relatives. And so a lot of negotiations pre-penalty were not of the most conducive and positive kind of relationship. They were adversarial, as was suggested a minute ago. Post-penalty, I witnessed firsthand negotiation process changing and working to become more cooperative and collaborative. But back to kids, you know, how did that impact our kids and our communities? You know, as I did that whole negotiation process, my students, the kids that I was in charge of in my classrooms, they also were impacted by this whole process. And I know that you that have been involved in that process understand that and have maybe even lived it as well as I. You know, Representative Bills, you earlier asked something about goals and deadlines, and I'm guessing that you are an educator that has goals and deadlines and timelines, and your kids are very well informed about those. I'm just guessing that, but I probably am pretty accurate on that. And I think we all need those, whether we're educators, whatever our field of occupation is. We need to have goals and deadlines and timelines. And I have seen this process work with the deadline, the penalty deadline. Now, Representative Barrett, you talked about fairness, and I appreciate and respect the fact of what you're trying to do in bringing the amendment forward to the 24 or 25 school districts that got penalized last time, because one of them was my school district. And last year, Representative Downey, I voted against that. And I talked to my superintendents of my districts, Brainerd and Crosby-Arrington, about that. And they, here were their words. You know, we would love to have that money back, but in all fairness, we can't support that, because we know that it's not fair, Representative Barrett. Why not go back to 2006 then, and 2004 and 2002? Because that would be fair then. If we went back to the 1990s and we took care of all the kids that were penalized, all the students that were penalized through this penalty process. Mr. Kroonquist came up and laid out some alternatives, which I think are good and acceptable for a lot of us, it sounds like. And I think that, you know, that's what my superintendents went on to say. Having said that, we would like to see a change in this. We would like to see a change. And I think having a deadline, having a set timeline is appropriate, but penalizing our kids, going back to kids, is something that we need to reconsider. And the Representative Breinert hit it right on the head, because this didn't come from, you know, educators or EM or whomever. It came about as a result of terrible contract negotiations pre-penalty. Terrible. I was there. I was involved. I walked the line. And they were terrible and adversarial. And this was an attempt to make sure that our kids were not impacted in our classrooms. That our kids had a quality and fair education in our classrooms, because that's what it was all about. That's how it was brought out in 1989. And I think it's done that. And, you know, I don't want to, you know, I think it's, it, you know, we sit up here and talk about, you know, what we can do and what we can't do, and the fairness and equitable and all that. Let's try to work together to come up with a solution that is fair and equitable for our kids. Not necessarily just, you know, our educators and our communities. All of those involved, sure. But remember, let's keep our kids as our priority. And I wanted to make those statements. I want to make those statements and a change from what I was going to say in the beginning. I have seen it work from pre to post. And so let's tweak it. Let's tweak it, and let's tweak it with fairness for all of the students in the state of Minnesota. Thank you, Mr.
Yep, Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a quick comment as well, and I'll make it very brief, and that is that for me this is a very easy vote. This is exactly what our constituents told us back in November, and that is, we understand this is a tough budget year, but please take away some of these mandates and allow local control on the local school boards and the local administrations. And for me, I think it's fallacious, to use your term, Representative Greiling, for the Minnesota Department of Education to budget failure, which is what we do. The Department of Education has budgeted $700,000 because we believe there's going to be failure. And so we're going to add that back into our general fund. When we talk, Representative Ward, about the kids, absolutely. This money deserves to be where it needs, where we initially told our school districts it would go, and that's back in the school districts. So for me, this is a vote. This is exactly why we were sent here, is to make this process much easier for our school districts and to make sure that our kids get the funding directly rather than allowing the adults to play around with it. So thank you.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I came to this hearing with an open mind and definitely wanted to listen to the pros and cons and try to be at least a little consistent with the way that I vote each day here. And as I did yesterday, the listen to both sides came down to basically what some of my values were in regards to the issue or the bill at hand. And the one thing that that I will mention here today that has not been mentioned and is the word productivity. It's been demonstrated here that if you don't have these deadlines, the contract negotiations go on. And I would contend that there is not a business in this state or the nation that would allow that level of unrest, indecisiveness, and unknown activity go on in their business, because that causes a lack of productivity. And I would contend that the contract negotiations opened for long periods of time is going to affect productivity. We all remember back to Tom Stinson talking about the one thing that our state has to do with the changing demographics and everything that is being asked of us. We need to become more productive. So I would not in any way support eliminating the deadline. I think that causes this whole system to become less productive than what it is right now. The $25, do I think it's fair that just one side pays it? No, I think there should be shared pain. I think both sides should be paying, possibly according to their ability to pay because of some district demographics. And I really, once again, I'm a little dismayed about some of these solutions that we come up with here around the table, because what they are doing is nibbling around the edges because it sounds really good and you can make a real easy case for it. But what the real problem, in my opinion, is this system is that we do not have an authentic pay-for-performance system. And that is what the state where we should be going, and we should be going quicker as opposed to slower. And so when we really take an in-depth look at the bargaining process, I think that, and to some of the other issues that I think that you are committed to, Mr. Chairman, I think that I think that that will really provide some better options for long-term solutions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Dietrich. And Representative Downey, any closing comments?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. What a great discussion, and I really appreciate the tone and I think the space that we have going forward here, and look forward to arm wrestling or headbutting or whatever you do up in Roseau with Representative Fabian and collaborating and working with everybody else as we move forward on this bill. So thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Downey. And with that, if there's no further comments, we'll represent the chair renews his motion to have House File 92 laid over for possible inclusion in a possible bill later.
Okay.
Thank you. And members, with that, no further announcements. This committee is adjourned.